everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Marvel Chronology episode, and today we're continuing with the Thanos Reading Order. I'm going to be talking about Marvel 2-in-1 presents The Thing and Spider-Man, annual number 2. We also have the Avengers, as well as Captain Marvel showing up in here. And this is sort of a continuation of what we talked about last episode, which was Avengers Annual 7. This is a two-part story. And again, I talked about this a little bit when I talked about Avengers. It's so interesting to me that Marvel canceled Warlock, which I think is probably where Jim Starlin would have told this story. But then they gave him these two annuals to finish. So Avengers makes sense, right? We saw with basically the first big Thanos epic that Starlin told in the pages of Captain Marvel that the Avengers were heavily involved in that. So it makes sense that the Avengers would be involved. But Marvel 2-in-1, it's quite a bit different having Spider-Man show up and Starlin even sort of addresses this and the fact that Spider-Man is not really a cosmic villain. Spider-Man himself, you hear when I go over the story, has his doubts about what he's doing there with all these cosmic people. I mean, I guess when you think about the early days of Thanos, he did fight the Thing, you know, real early on. The Thing made a guest appearance in one of those Captain Marvel issues. I don't know if that was due to the Thing's popularity or the Fantastic Four popularity. And I wonder, so what if Adam Warlock had not been canceled? Because really his role, he has an okay sized role in this issue as he did in last issue. Like, he's there and he does important things, but the Avengers annual certainly seems to focus more on the Avengers, and this Marvel 2-in-1 annual, it almost focuses more on Spider-Man than even the Thing. And certainly the Avengers are, I wouldn't say they're an afterthought, but they are not as active. And you could say the same thing about Adam Warlock. He's not, you know, he kind of shows up right at the end to, you know, do what he needs to do, sort of quote unquote save the day. But, you know, he's not the driving force. And so, again, I just wonder, is it the reason that the Avengers are so prominent in the first part of the story? Because it happens in an Avengers annual, you buy an Avengers annual, you expect to get a lot of Avengers, right? Same thing here. You're buying a Marvel 2-in-1 because you expect to get Thing and Spider-Man. And they are sort of the two most prominent characters. I would argue Spider-Man's even a little more prominent than Thing, like I said. So you're not buying this to read Adam Warlock. I mean, Adam Warlock got canceled, right? So I just wonder if Adam Warlock doesn't get canceled and Starlin finishes telling the story of Thanos in the pages of Warlock rather than in the pages of Avengers Annual 7 and Marvel 2-in-1, annual number two, then would the story have played out differently? And it's not something, you know, I've read these books before, obviously, you know, classic cosmic Marvel, Jim Starlin, I've read them before, but it never hit me until I read them this time. So I'm just not sure. And I guess that I should ask Jim about it, right? I've never asked him about it before. He's been on the show a couple times. I like I said, it never really hit me before. So if I have Jim on again at some point, and we're going to talk about Thanos, because a lot of times, you know, if we have Jim on, we're going to talk about Dreadstar, we're going to talk about other things. I'm sure the guy gets tired of being asked about nothing but Thanos all the time, but I am sort of curious about that. So I'll probably ask him if he minds I think I did that last time he was on. I think I asked him, "Would you mind if we if I give you a couple Thanos questions?" Cause he was on to talk about Dreadstar, the return of Dreadstar, and even more exciting than the return of Dreadstar would be the fact that, you know, after his injury, where he hurt his drawing hand due to the explosion of one of those soda machines, those homemade soda machines, the CO2 canister exploded and damaged his hand. He wasn't able to draw anymore, which is just, you know, a tragedy in the comic book world, because Jim is such an amazing artist And the fact that he's now back able to draw is just so great. So if you didn't hear that interview when I did it, I would encourage you to go back and look for that Dreadstar Returns interview with Jim Starlin. But yeah, this is it's an interesting decision that Marvel made to finish telling this sort of epic story of Thanos in these two annuals that you wouldn't necessarily feel like go together. And I talked about it at the end of last episode about how you really could have read that annual, the Avengers annual, and feel like, okay, it's done, it's over. You know, the bad guy escapes, quote unquote, lives to fight another day. We've seen plenty of stories end that way, but it does continue in this, although I feel like it could be a complete story if you just read the Avengers annual. Because I feel like in the pages of the Avengers annual, it's not as forcefully put upon you that, hey, when you're done reading this story, go read Marvel 2-in-1 annual number 2. As opposed to if you turn to the first page of this book I'm about to talk about, the 2-in-1 annual, right there, first thing, upper left corner, in big letters, wait, don't read this story until after you check out Avengers Annual 7, now on sale. So, you know, much tougher. I would say, even though they give a little bit of a recap here, like they always do, you definitely will get more out of this book at having read Avengers Annual 7, whereas, you know, you read Avengers Annual 7, and if you're happy with the way that ended, you don't necessarily need to pick this up, although it does add to the story. And then the last thing I'll say about sort of the whole story of Thanos up to this point, before I dive into the issue, is that this really sort of ends the first big chapter, the first big story of Thanos. And there could be an argument made for this could have basically been the end of Thanos. What happens here, and I'll talk about it more at the end, we could never have seen Thanos again, and it could have completely made sense. Obviously, a lot of people would have been disappointed. You know, I think a lot of people feel like he's a great villain, and he lives in that gray area where a lot of the best characters do live, where everything is not so black and white, and sometimes he can be on the side of the angels and sometimes not. And then obviously with his appearance in the MCU and all that, which I still haven't seen, in the interest of full disclosure, I still haven't seen Avengers Endgame or what have you, but I do still find it strange that Thanos is basically an environmentalist that thinks there's too many people in the universe. That's just weird to me. But anyway, let's go ahead and get on with the issue. As I said, it's Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 2 with The Thing and Spider-Man guest starring the Avengers and Captain Marvel. And it opens up, we see Peter Parker is sleeping, but he's having a dream. And this is the way they frame the recap sequence. And he basically dreams about the Avengers and Adam Warlock and Captain Marvel battling against a being who, you know, you've never seen before, battling against these alien criminals. And, you know, he sees Captain Marvel and Adam Warlock transport over from Sanctuary 2 to Sanctuary 3. He sees Captain Marvel take out the ion cannon, and then Thanos able to pretty much rebuff Adam Warlock. We think kill him, but then we saw in the issue there where Adam Warlock didn't die. He was actually killed by his, you know, alternate future self. But again, go listen to one of the Warlock episodes. Go listen to Avengers Annual 7. And then he sees Iron Man and Thor attack Thanos. He sees Iron Man take out the jewel, and he sees Thanos basically, you know, do what Thanos does, or what a lot of villains do. You may have won the battle, but you haven't won the war, blah, blah, blah. And he teleports away. And again, as Spider-Man is dreaming all of this, as it comes to a close, we get the little editorial blurb from Archie Goodwin saying all this transpired in Avengers Annual 7. So Spider-Man then realizes that his rest is not being disturbed by nightmares of his own creation, but he's experienced part of a mental call from the very powerful mind of Moondragon, who also has been involved as sort of an ally of Captain America. And Spider-Man goes on to think, Peter Parker goes on to think, a call you know you must answer, but only after you have the complete story. And now he gets some semblance of what's happening now and some new information for us that we didn't see happen in Avengers Annual 7. So Thanos apparently transported back to the original space arc. He saw how the strategic retreat of Thanos returned him to his battleground where he had been before, where the Avengers were still fighting against the criminals and the thralls that he had basically set up to attack Earth and take out our sun. And once Thanos was there and actually directing his minions, if you will, they went from being a kind of a disorganized, ineffectual mob to a well-oiled fighting machine. And the Avengers were just at that point with that much coordination between the people they were fighting and the vast number of opponents. You know, they were vastly outnumbered, that the Avengers were basically taken out. And that's what we see in the pages here, that quite a few of the Avengers, all of them actually, all get knocked out and captured. We see Moondragon getting hit from behind. We see Vision himself actually blasted by Thanos. Captain America's ambushed from behind. Scarlet Witch is physically attacked. And it looks like the Beast is physically taken down by Thanos as well. So now that all the Avengers have been captured, Thanos then turns his attention to Captain Marvel, Thor, and Iron Man, who are heading back to the ship, back to Sanctuary 2 from Sanctuary 3. You know, obviously Thanos transported, got there instantly. These three have to fly around, you know, because the ships were on opposite sides of the sun. That was how Thanos kind of hid Sanctuary 3 from Sanctuary 2. And so as he starts scanning space, he sees them. They're all bunched up together. He fires at them with his weapons, and they're powerful enough to even incapacitate Thor. And even though it's not a direct hit, because Captain Marvel and Iron Man aren't as powerful as Thor, even the sort of indirect blast of that weapon takes them out as well. And that basically means all the Avengers and their allies have been captured. And we see on the following page that Thanos has them in a stasis beam, which basically shifts them a microsecond away from our reality. So they're not in our same kind of time space, and they basically can't move. The only fatality being Adam Warlock, like I mentioned, even though Thanos believes that he's the one that killed him, it was actually his future self that showed up and, you know, sucked him into the soul gem. So his body's brought before Thanos, and Thanos takes the soul gem from Adam Warlock's forehead, the soul gem that he had always coveted. And even though he doesn't possess the artificial gem any longer, because Iron Man destroyed it, that artificial gem, which had been imbued with the power of all six of the soul gems, or what eventually come to be known as the Infinity Gems or Infinity Stones in the MCU, Thanos thinks, even though this isn't enough to blow out all stars in the galaxy, to destroy all stars, it might be enough to just blow out our star, Sol, or the sun. And that might be enough to appease death. That might be enough to get Thanos back in the good graces of death, you know, the quote-unquote woman that he proposes to love. So once Spider-Man kind of is, you know, that information is beamed into him. And again, even though Moondragon, she's trapped along with the Avengers and Captain Marvel, even though she's slightly out of phase, you know, with the power of her mind, she must be obviously able to gather this information that she's kind of seeing play out in front of her eyes and beam it over to Spider-Man. So Spider-Man wakes up at this point, and he thinks it's all true. Somehow, while in prison, Moondragon beamed a telepathic SOS, and my spider sense, so that explains why he was the one that picked it up, my spider sense picked it up in my sleep. But, you know, why did she choose me? I'm certainly not equipped for this sort of thing. I'm no powerhouse like Thor, or a star jumper like Captain Marvel. And, you know, this is what I was talking about earlier, saying that, Spider-Man is not, he's not somebody you necessarily would think of as a cosmic hero, right? Like he just doesn't have that sort of, you know, it's not his milieu. It's not his normal playground. He thinks to himself, I'm only your typical neighborhood Spider-Man. So meanwhile, out in space, we see that the Lord of Chaos and Order, the Lords of Chaos and Order, are contemplating amongst themselves, saying it goes badly. Death's game piece at this point has the superior position to us. You know, he's going to destroy all reality. And Master Order says, well, we're already forced to put our reserves in play. And Chaos says, well, we'll win the day. I think that we're still in good shape. The still one has never had such a strong hand before, but we have our own champions, you know, in the form of Spider-Man and the man he's destined to ally with himself, Ben Grimm. And Lord Chaos says, well, yeah, you know, I hope that's enough. And so obviously we haven't seen Spider-Man reach out to Ben Grimm, but as the story continues, we see just that. Because Spider-Man's like, well, how do I get up into space, right? I'm all suited up and ready for action, but I can't exactly, you know, web swing up into space. So I need somebody that has access to a spacecraft. And again, this is in the middle of the night where he received this sort of telepathic message. So he's like, man, who can I go to at this time of night? Well, how about the friendly folks over at the Baxter Building? And he sneaks in and he finds the Thing reading a horror novel. Actually, he's reading what looks to be Salem's Lot, as the Thing is thinking, blast it, the stinking vampire's got the priest. And on the front, we see S-A-L-E and part of an M. And then on the bottom, we see L-O and part of a T. So clearly Salem's Lot, although I suppose Marvel couldn't make it more obvious and put the whole title, because I don't know what copyright law was. I don't know if Stephen King would have cared. I think he's actually a comic book fan. I mean, his son, Joe Hill, actually writes comics. So, but again, this was a, you know, different time, 1977. He might have had a different thought about it then, if only because, you know, he wasn't a best-selling author yet at that time. He was just kind of coming on, so he may have wanted some money. But again, this sort of thing was done back then a little more tongue-in-cheek than it is now. It wasn't as big of a deal. So anyway, I think Starlin has him reading it, because then we see Spider-Man sort of sneak up behind him and tap him on the head, and it surprises the Thing so much that he gasps and he sucks in the cigar that he was smoking as he was reading. So we see him do a big like gasp and suck in the cigar, and then on the next panel we see him spit it out with a patooey, and he's all mad. Who, Spider-Man? I should have known. You know how much, do you have any idea how much that cigar you made me swallow just cost, you no good insect? And Spider-Man's like, oh, dude, just like chill out. And so Spider-Man says, all right, I'm here because I need your help. But the Thing is not, you know, he won't let him get a word in edgewise. He's talking about how Reed's going to be mad because he spent so much money on the security system to keep bugs like a riffraff like Spider-Man out. And Spider-Man's got no respect for machinery and popping out of nowhere, scaring the daylights out of people. And it's embarrassing, making them look bad, you know, in front of their fans, if their fans were to find out. Finally, Spider-Man's had enough. He's like, shut up, please. Thing's like, whoa, dude, what's chill? Like, what's wrong? You got troubles? You come to the right place then. You know, we're all helping ears and helping hands here at the Fantastic Four. And so Spider-Man's like, all right, why don't you pour us a cup of coffee, because I have one heck of a story to tell you. And so he lays it out for the Thing, and the Thing's response is, well, that's the craziest story I ever heard. What have you been smoking, kid? But the Thing is, you know, and no pun intended, Ben Grimm has dealt with Thanos before. So Spider-Man's, you know, trying to convince him, hey, I'm not snowing you. Like I promised. You're the only person I can turn to. And the Thing's like, well, you know, you've always been pretty straight with us in the past. We've been able to trust you. So I guess we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Come on. Reed's got tons of spacecraft. Reed has a space shuttlecraft that he wants me to test pilot when I get a chance. And now's as good a time as any. So he asks Pete, well, where exactly is this, you know, giant space arc? And Spider-Man's like, well, it's right off Earth, just facing the sun. And Ben, you know, being a former astronaut, it's like, dude, you're a great navigator. That is like such great information. I mean, what do you, like, space is big. That's why they call it space. But the thing's like, well, don't worry. You know, this crate has a tracking system. So we'll pin it down, if it's out there. And Spider-Man's like, if you still have doubts, think, oh, perish the thought. How can I doubt the word of a man in blue and red leotards who crawls on walls? But it doesn't take them long before they're out in space that they pick up something on the radar. And sure enough, it's pretty much the biggest spacecraft any of them have ever seen. A whole mile across. And Ben says, well, my apologies, Spidey. Looks like you were right this time. Spidey's like, what do you mean this time? So before the thing can even answer, they're attacked by a tractor beam that pulls them into the ship. And they basically don't have enough power in their ship to prevent them being pulled in. So the thing thinks, well, you know, I've been through this sort of thing before, and these guys usually play rough. So sit back and let me handle things. And he basically boots the door off its hinges and jumps out and starts attacking a bunch of the aliens that we saw the Avengers previously attacking. And Spider-Man's not about to, you know, hang around and do nothing. He says, no way, Ben, I didn't come along just for the ride. You're not going to hog all the fun. And the thing's like, but isn't Monster Bashing a bit out of your line? Spider-Man's like, well, definitely it is, but some of these guys are pretty small. And so I feel like I can handle them. They're not much worse than the Earth thugs with some jazzy hardware, he says. So I'm not going to let you have all the fun. You take care of the larger matters, and I'll take care of the smaller ones. And the thing says, yeah, that's a good idea. These larger monsters are keeping me pretty busy. And they do pretty well against the mob. And Thanos, obviously looking on, hears Thing say this and says, yes, I do see, Ben Grimm. You and your friend here are devastating my guardsmen. You two actually could be a threat if I allow it to continue. But instead, what I'll do is turn off the gravity. And so now, once he does that, Spider-Man and Ben are kind of, you know, stuck. They're not able to really get any leverage or move around. And Ben recognizes the voice and says, that was Thanos. I'd recognize that voice anywhere this side of the grave. Spidey, I think we're really in for it now. And so now that Spidey and the Thing are basically helpless, they get zapped by some ray guns because they're not able to, you know, move around or dodge. And the scene shifts back to chaos and order, and they're talking about how it looks like they've lost another round. And Order says, well, we kind of expected this to happen. Neither of them are really meant to win the day for us. Their job is to release the man who will basically bring us to victory. And as they say that, we see a picture of the soul gem that we know Adam Warlock is trapped within. And over a course of four panels, we kind of zoom in on the world of the Soul Gem and see Adam Warlock standing there in the final panel. So they say our champion is, of course, Adam Warlock. And on the following page, the scene actually shifts to the goings on inside the Soul Gem. And we see Adam Warlock, Gamora, and Pip. And Adam is basically saying, less than an hour ago, I was dying from a wound suffered at the hands of Thanos. And now I find myself in this paradise-like world of Soul Gem. I don't have a care in the world. And better still, I have friends here. You know, it's so great. And even my old enemies who also fell victim to the gem's hunger are here, and they're no longer my enemies. For here, we share the same feelings, the same memories, the same soul. You know, within the gem, no one is victimizing anybody. Nobody wants to harm anybody else. I never dreamt that I would finally find peace and happiness. I just pray that it will last. Meanwhile, back on Sanctuary, we see that the Thing and Spider-Man have regained consciousness, and Thanos is doing his best Bond villain impersonation, basically telling them everything that's been going on. Before you stand the mute testimony to my might, I've captured all the Avengers. and my thralls are all busy preparing similar accommodations for you. But until then, I thought I'd brag a little, basically. And he says, I thought you might enjoy being shown the fate you are escaping by becoming part of my, shall we say, trophy collection. So he talks about how he's going to basically use the power of the soul gem that he took from Adam Warlock to basically make the sun go Nova and destroy all life in their solar system. And the thing's like, God, good heaven, man. Why? Thanos says, well, because of death, of course. Like, that's the whole reason that I do anything. It's all for death. And so Thanos goes on to say, years ago, after my exile from Titan, I met and fell in love with the personification of death. And, you know, for a time I served her and she aided me in my schemes. But then, you know, recently I suffered a defeat at the hands of Captain Marvel and the Avengers, and my lover abandoned me because of that, right? Which is basically what we saw in the pages of Captain Marvel in that story. And so Thanos goes on to say, I swore to regain her favor with a stellar token of love, the likes of which has never before been witnessed in the cosmos. My offering would show her that I, above all other beings, deserve to be her champion and lover. That is why your solar system must die. And the thing's like, yeah, dude, you've lost it. But I'll tell you what, Dr. Grimm has got the cure for what ails you, his world-famous knuckle knockout formula. And he tries to go toe-to-toe with Thanos physically. And, you know, Thanos being Thanos, like, you thick-skinned fool, you think you can actually, you know, stand up to me? How dare you pit your minuscule might against me? Away from me, you craggy gargoyle. So the thing is knocked out pretty quickly. And Spider-Man's like, well, I'm in trouble because this guy just laid out the thing without even working up a sweat. And in fact, Thanos challenges Spider-Man saying, well, your turn. You want a taste of my might? Spider-Man's thinking, I'm really in trouble. You know, I'm facing this monster who just creamed the Avengers and Ben Grimm and Captain Marvel. And he plans on blowing out the sun. You know, this is way out of my league. What the heck can I do? I'm used to fighting cheap hoods and costume crazies. I don't belong here and I'm not going to stay. And he actually runs. And Thanos is like, wait, what? What are you doing? And Spider-Man, like, hey, I'm leaving, man. This is the Avengers hassle. They know how to get out of these situations. They'll save the day, won't they? And he swings off and Thanos is yelling at him, guards, guards, get after that craven costume clown, bring back his head. And Spider-Man's basically dodging their gunfire as he's swinging through the ship going, man, I need to find a way to make it back to the thing's ship and then try to figure out how I'm going to fly it. And that's the other thing that I didn't mention this at the time, but I did notice it when I was reading it most recently, is when they arrive there, the thing kicks open the door of the spaceship. Like, it appears that it's bent and like knocked off its hinges. So you just wonder, like, why would he do that? Now it's not spaceworthy anymore, right? Like, how are you going to fly it if the door won't close? But maybe the damage isn't as bad as it first appeared. But anyway, Spider-Man's thinking, I can't stay here. All I'm going to accomplish is getting killed. But if Thanos succeeds, what's the point of running back to Earth? I'm going to die anyway. So my choices seem to be remain or run. Looks like a dead spider either way. So I guess I might as well stay. But now what? If I take on Thanos directly, I'll lose for sure. In fact, he'd probably wipe the floor with anybody on board, except maybe Thor. So that looks like that's going to have to be my plan. I need to free the man with the hammer. And to do so, first thing I could do is make sure I don't die. So he manages to escape the last of the minions that are following him. And, you know, he blames himself running on blind panic. And he's like, well, I'm glad that seems to sort of have passed. maybe I'm getting too old for this gig, but I don't have time to think about that now, but I may need to do some heavy thinking along those lines later. That is, if there is a later for me. So again, we shift the scene to Chaos and Order, who have been watching this, and Chaos is saying, man, for a moment there, I thought the young spirit was going, the youth spirit, Spider-Man spirit was going to fail us. His instinct for self-preservation nearly kept him from his chosen fate. And Order says, well, I had seen this and I had faith in the noble Earthman's strong heart winning out in the end, right? Great power comes great responsibility. So hopefully we chose well, right? And meanwhile, Spider-Man has made his way back to the main chamber where Thanos is, and he's blathering on about Spider-Man. Bah, Spider-Man, I almost placed him alongside you, my vanquished yet respected foes. Such cowardice does not deserve preservation. And Spider-Man's thinking to himself, man, I hoped when I came back here that Thanos was going to be gone, but no such luck. So I don't dare try to basically foul up his gizmo that's keeping everybody hostage with webbing. I've got to find another way to destroy it fast and efficient so Thanos can't stop me. And I need something heavy to smash it with. And since there's nothing laying around, it looks like I'm going to have to smash it with myself, basically. And so he launches himself feet first down at the equipment, and it wakes the Avengers up. Thanos, of course, no, this can't be happening. I'm like, dude, this is what happened. You had them all at your mercy, Bond villain Thanos. You could have killed them, you know, teleported them out into space, done all kinds of different things, but instead you wanted your trophies and now you're going to pay. So the Avengers are indeed free, and they all immediately start attacking Thanos. And, you know, he's being Thanos and speaking in that, you know, grandeur of language. Unhand me, you pitiful louts. You may have succeeded in escaping imprisonment, but I assure you that defeating Thanos, the right hand of death, is another matter entirely. And then he uses his signaler apparently on his belt buckle. So he reaches down saying, even now my army of thralls is rushing to my side. Together we will deal with you as I should have done originally. Yeah, Thanos, you think? But you know, in his defense, he does think that he defeated the Avengers relatively easily the first time once he returned to his ship, you know, and was basically in charge and ordering the kind of the actions of his minions, right? We talked about how his minions or his guards or whatever you want to call them were a well-oiled machine taking out the Avengers once he was there to sort of direct them. So they feel like that Thanos could have felt like the Avengers weren't that big of a danger because he just calls in his guards and they win again, right? Well, the Avengers are fighting with a little more ferocity this time. Captain America says, you heard the man, Avengers. It's do or die this time. So tear into them, but good. Plus, don't forget, they have the added benefit of having the Thing on their side this time, which they didn't have last time. And the Thing is actually able to grab Thanos from behind, saying, hey, Purple Puss, remember me? And holds him for Thor to basically start beating on. And so we get this great splash page of the Thing holding on to Thanos and Thor giving his best right cross. And at the bottom, we see Starlin telling us, in the very eye of this storm of bodies, the Asgardian deity and the Fantastic Four's strongest member struggle to keep the villainous descendant of Olympus from turning the surrounding chaos into an organized and effective killing force directed at Earth's defenders. So they figure if they can keep Thanos himself sort of distracted, they can keep him from organizing his army here and defeating the Avengers again. So the Beast, Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Vision, they all seem to be doing much better against the army this time as Thor and the Thing take on Thanos. But it doesn't go as well as they might hope. They trade punches back and forth, and you know, it's sort of a pitched battle, but eventually Thanos is able to sort of take a second to regain his bearings, and he uses his destructive eye beams with all their power and launches them off at both Thanos and the Thing, and basically knocks them out. And Spider-Man's like, well, it looks like things are in trouble unless I can do something again. And I should also say that the action that Spider-Man took to use his own body and sort of dive bomb the equipment that was holding the Avengers in stasis knocked Spider-Man out. So he's coming to and he's seeing that the thing is knocked out. Thor is being attacked with the eye beams and he's only moments from unconsciousness. And he's obviously worried about that. And he thinks, well, what can I do? You know, I've got a bundle of scrambled eggs for a head and I'll be no help in the fisticuffs department. But for some unexplained reason, I feel like everything is depending on me. And, you know, again, with Lord Chaos and Master Order, that is definitely the case. And we even see Chaos say, you are correct in that assumption, mortal, but the sole responsibility is not your burden. There is another mere yards away, but also a world away. And all of a sudden, we see in Soul Gem that Adam Warlock is doubled over in pain. He says, ah, my head. And Gamora is asking what's wrong. He says, I'm all of a sudden, I feel this pull. I'm being drawn from the gem. I'm being called back to reality for one last task, one last mission of vengeance. And we see Master Order saying the final layer is primed. All that remains is for Spider-Man to facilitate his release. All of a sudden, Spider-Man's spider sense goes crazy and he makes his way to the globe, the glass globe that Thanos has encased the soul gem in. And he realizes that the reason his spider sense is going off is because he needs to free that gem from the globe. But all of a sudden, he's being overwhelmed by a bunch of the different members of Thanos's army. And with sort of his last ounce of energy, he is able to knock the soul gem and the globe itself off of the little stand that Thanos has on it and hits the ground and breaks open. And there's a big flash and Spider-Man's yelling, I did it, I did it, I did it. And we see Adam Warlock emerge from the soul gem. And he looks different than we've ever seen him before. It's clearly still Adam Warlock, but it's like he doesn't even have his costume. He's a flame. He's a light. He's still that golden skinned looking being, but he does appear to be, you know, on fire. You'd almost call him like this avenging angel looking guy. And after Spider-Man yelling, you know, I did it, I did it, I did it. And then seeing this, this being emerge, he's like, what did I do? I did something, but what was it that I actually did? And Adam Warlock's the one to respond saying, you've succeeded in releasing me, the ultimate Avenger. And Spider-Man says, well, who are you? What do you mean? And Adam Warlock says, Thanos knows me and my purpose. Is that not so, evil one? And now we finally see Thanos is worried. By the Great Nebula, it can't be you. I saw you die. I killed you. And Thanos says, yeah, that you did. And I would have remained dead, but I could not rest while you remained a threat to the universe. And it reaches out for Thanos. And again, we see a look of fear on Thanos's face. Just denying that this is happening. No, no, you can't stop me now. And when there's a blinding flash and when the smoke sort of clears here, we see that Thanos has been transformed into solid granite. Adam Warlock is nowhere to be found. And all of a sudden, the army that Thanos had, those that are still standing, those that aren't unconscious, those that had not already been defeated by the Avengers, quickly give up. You know, they're not about to keep going when there's no reward on the horizon. You know, there's the Thanos has been taken out. He's been killed. He's been turned into granite. So why keep fighting when there's no reward? There's nothing in it for you. So Spider-Man says, well, now that we've beaten this army and disarmed him, what are we going to do with him? And Captain Marvel says, well, probably going to release him. Spider-Man's like, what? You got to be kidding me. We can't just let these people go. Captain Marvel's like, and what do you suggest? You want to imprison all these super dangerous aliens on Earth for their crimes? Think of all the problems that would cause. And Spider-Man's like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. I think Star-Lord throws that in there just to remind us that that Spider-Man's not used to dealing with the sort of cosmic sort of stuff. So meanwhile, a little while later, a bunch of the of our heroes here, they get together on an asteroid and they have a little memorial for Adam Warlock because they assume he's dead, right? And Captain Marvel's sort of given a eulogy saying he was born on Earth. His creators meant him to be a prototype of the future of humanity. But yet he strangely always felt out of place at home, and he took to wandering the stars. And that's why we've buried him here, along with the woman that he may have loved, which would be Gamora, and his one friend, which would be Pip. And, you know, we pity the loss of his life, but it's fitting that amidst the heavens here, Adam Warlock has finally found a place for himself and maybe found some peace. You know, in his youth, wherever he went, he was always found guilty of being naive or innocent, and he was eventually basically executed for that crime. And he was resurrected from the ashes and basically saved the day. He found the life and truth, and he protected all of us, and he died protecting it, which is, you know, kind of the destiny we should all hope for to sort of pass along in an honorable fashion like that. So we will mourn you, Adam Warlock. We can do no more. And we see the gravestone that says, "Here lies Adam Warlock, Godslayer, savior of two worlds and tormented soul. May he now be at peace," 1967, 1977. 1967 being when he first appeared in the pages of, I think it was Fantastic Four. And then 1977 being the year that this Marvel 2-in-1 annual came out. And so, again, they're just making the assumption that that he's dead. So later aboard the Sanctuary, the heroes are basically kind of lamenting the loss of Warlock and thinking about how they lost a champion that really could have helped them out. And the Thing is trying to cheer up Spider-Man, basically saying, you know, I'd rather that he made that sacrifice and this ended tonight rather than it being, you know, a continuing battle. And no matter what, we can't think of this as an ending, but rather a new beginning. So it's been a long night. So hopefully let's go find some coffee and, you know, things look better in the morning. And as he's talking about, you know, new beginning and whatnot, the scene shifts to inside Gemworld, and we see that Gamora, Pip, and Adam Warlock himself are still there. And Adam Warlock talks about how they'll try to make a life for themselves there in the paradise of the world inside the Soul Gem, where there's no strife or pain. And in a way, they're right. Adam Warlock did finally find the peace that he always wanted. Not the way they thought. It's not the peace and eternal slumber of death itself, but he's in the Soul Gem. And I suppose this was Starlin's version of giving Adam Warlock a happy ending. Meanwhile, we do see the final fate here of Thanos, as he's sort of just left to stand as a memorial to, I guess, ambition and evil, with Master Order and Lord Chaos discussing it. And Master Order says, you know, Thanos is destined to spend infinity trapped within the petrified form of his own corruption, lamenting the waste of his days and weeping for a love unfulfilled. And as he's saying that, we're seeing the statue and we're zooming in really close. And in the final panel, right before the end, we're close up on Thanos's face, this granite, solid granite statue that Thanos has become. And we do see a tear coming out of Thanos's eye. So maybe he is weeping for a love unfulfilled, you know, the fact that he'll never be with death again. Because I don't think he's dead, right? I mean, I don't think Starlin wants us to think he's dead. I think what Starlin wants us to know, and it's why he puts in this sort of last exchange between Lord Chaos and Master Order, is Thanos is trapped, right? He's petrified. He's been turned into stone. But there's still something of Thanos there. It's not a victory. It's not, okay, Thanos loves and worships death. So if you kill Thanos and he's dead, he gets to go be with death. That's kind of a reward for him. But he doesn't get that. What he gets is to basically be killed or be not killed, but be imprisoned in this granite form for all time. And like I was saying earlier, this really could have been the end for Thanos. Right, we could have never seen Thanos show up again, because that's kind of the way Starlin set it up. Maybe he didn't have ideas for what Thanos would go on to continue to do. Obviously, this is not what happens. Thanos goes on to become, you know, one of the most well-known characters in the Marvel Universe. But what's interesting is, you know, Starlin was the only one who really ever used Thanos. And I think that that's how he wanted it. Thanos was a very beloved creation of his, and he was always the one that wanted to sort of steer his direction and destiny. And that's the way it was for a long time. The only one who ever really wrote about Thanos was Starlin. But in a way, Jim was almost a victim of his own success, because what happens is after this, again, as I mentioned, when we're talking about the death year of Adam Warlock being 1977, Thanos doesn't show up again until February of 1990 in the issue, or I guess it would probably be like December of 1989, maybe right around there. But it's the issue that's cover dated February 1990 of Silver Surfer, with Jim Starlin then taking over the scripting of that series. And, you know, maybe that's the whole reason he came back. Maybe he's in the ensuing years, he came up with an idea, this idea to expand on what the Infinity Gems are. You know, that it's not just, they're not just all soul gems. You know, you have a mind gem, you have a time gem, you have a space gem, what have you. And bringing Thanos back to sort of say, okay, let's go with a gauntlet this time. Let's use the gems themselves rather than, you know, stealing power from the gems and putting them all into one synthetic gem. You know, however you want to look at it. But think about that. Think about how popular Thanos is now. Marvel would never go nearly 13 years without using him. And I do say that there is one thing that I should add. Starlin did the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel in 1982. It's Marvel's first graphic novel, and it was critically acclaimed, well-received. It's been printed over and over and over. There's so many editions of it. And it's a really great story. It's very poignant. It's a fitting end for Captain Marvel in a way, but also a very tragic end. He, you know, as he mentions in this issue, talking about wanting to die honorably. And that's sort of the last thing that Captain Marvel gets to do, as he dies when he succumbs to cancer, which is just terrible to see him sort of waste away. But I bring that graphic novel up to say that Thanos does appear in that graphic novel. We see that Thanos' father, Mentor, and his brother Eros, they make appearances. Obviously, they're from Titan, Mentor being the one that runs Titan. And we see they've come into possession of Thanos's, you know, a statue or Thanos himself, as he's been turned into granite. That statue appears in the pages of the Captain Marvel graphic novel. And then Captain Marvel, at one point, talks to Thanos. Like, Thanos appears and talks and converses with Captain Marvel. But it's never clear that this is the real Thanos, right? This could just be, you know, some hallucinations or imagination of Captain Marvel, being that he's so close to death that he thinks he sees Thanos, but it's not really Thanos. But, you know, that's up for interpretation. So I say 13 years, but really, if you talk about, well, technically he appeared in 1982, then you're only talking about like almost 8 years that he didn't show up. But either way, it's a long, long time. Can't imagine Marvel now going 13 years or 8 years or even 8 months without giving us Thanos appearing somewhere, because he sells books and he's a great character. Because again, it's that moral ambiguity where Thanos sort of lives by his own rules, you know, and Starlin established that early, because we saw in the pages of the Adam Warlock series that Thanos was on Adam Warlock's side, right? Helping him defeat the Magus. It was for his own ends. But he has been on the side of angels from time to time, basically when it suits his own long-term goals. So again, he's a great character. It's not surprising that Jim Starlin brought him back and Marvel let him bring him back. And again, the fact that Starlin hasn't gotten to basically navigate and steer the entire sort of narrative of Thanos throughout, you know, the last three or four more decades has everything to do with the popularity. Like, once a character gets so popular and he's making a company money, they're going to do with them as they will, right? You're going to get more eyes on you. You certainly couldn't kill Thanos and take him off the stage for 8 years now. They wouldn't allow that. Like, if you went, if some writer currently at Marvel, even if it's like a Jonathan Hickman or a Donnie Cates, you can't go to Marvel and say, okay, I'm going to tell the last Thanos story and kill him. And then nobody's going to tell any more stories because I want my story to have impact and meaning. And I don't want Thanos to be used anymore. Editorial at Marvel is going to go, no, you're not. That's a you know, character that makes us money. And ultimately Disney is a business and Disney owns Marvel and they're in the business to make money. So it's just not going to happen. But again, 1977, it was a different world. Obviously not as many people knew Thanos, and Starlin was able to sort of end it on its own terms. And again, I think the whole story starting with Iron Man 55 all the way up into this issue, this Marvel 2-in-1 annual 2, is really one big story of Thanos. Sometimes he appears in some of the issues that we've talked about more than others. Obviously, the cool thing would have been if Starlin had just been greenlit to create a Thanos series, right? And all we got was Thanos with the Thanos series and a lot of Thanos and his machinations and thought process and all that sort of thing. And the heroes would be the guest stars in the book that would come in and fight him. Because there's a few issues, especially of the Warlock series, where he's barely there at all. And he's barely there in the first his first appearance in Iron Man 55, the first issue of Captain Marvel. He's barely there. He's only seen in shadow. First Starlin issue of Captain Marvel, I should say. It's not, you know, first. It's not issue number one of Captain Marvel. I think it's 27 or 28. But anyway, it's a fun ride. It's classic cosmic Marvel, like I always talk about when I always use that word classic when I talk about Jim Starlin's Marvel work, because it is, it's classic stuff. And it was a very ambitious and epic story that Starlin was able to tell, and throwing him in to the Captain Marvel original graphic novel, the first Marvel graphic novel, I think was just a way for Starlin just to have a little fun. Hey, you know, here's one of my favorite sons, one that I actually created. Let's throw him in this graphic novel that I'm doing. And plus Captain Marvel and Thanos, Captain Marvel and Thanos are so inextricably linked based on what happened when Thanos tried to take over the universe with the cosmic cube. So it makes sense that Thanos would show up in Captain Marvel's mind when he was on death's door. So, but yeah, really great stuff. I am glad that he brought him back. I was always, you know, I remember reading this stuff. I didn't read it when it came out. I was too young, but, I was always a fan of Starlin and went back and picked up these issues and, you know, collected them and read the stories and was always a big fan of Thanos. And so I was reading Silver Surfer at the time when Thanos made his return. And I don't think I was aware at the time that Thanos had basically been off the playing field ever since, because I read that Captain Marvel graphic novel. I even at the time that came out, 1990, that Silver Surfer issue came out, I wasn't aware that Thanos hadn't appeared at all between the two. So again, I'm glad he came back. I remember, you know, continuing to read Silver Surfer. He's a favorite character of mine, and loving everything Starlin was doing with the Infinity Gems and the Infinity Gauntlet, and, you know, picked up Infinity Gauntlet, the first series off the rack. And yeah, at that point, you knew, like, Infinity Gauntlet, that series was so well done, and it hit in such a great way, raised Ron Lim's profile as an artist. You know, started with George Perez. I think he had some health issues, had to drop out. Lim stepped in admirably. But yeah, once that hit, once Infinity Gauntlet hit, it was such a huge success that at that point, that, like, Thanos was never going away again, you know, not certainly not for an extended period, like 8 or 10 or 13 years or what have you. So, but anyway, it's fun to go back and revisit these early issues. But that being said, we will go ahead and talk about the Captain Marvel graphic novel. Captain Marvel, I guess it's just Marvel graphic novel number one, I guess is how it's, if I remember correctly, is how it's numbered. So we will talk about that Captain Marvel story, the death of Captain Marvel, on the next episode. And then we'll jump forward almost a decade, and we'll dive into the Silver Surfer appearances of Thanos, move on to Thanos Quest, and then eventually get into the Infinity Gauntlet. So we're moving into familiar territory for those that are fans of the MCU and may not have read these comics before. This has been sort of new territory for you. But once we get into Infinity Gauntlet and Thanos Quest and things like that, you're going to start hearing about ideas that may sound familiar from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, even though things in the comics are not going to play out the same way. And Thanos himself is a little different. He's certainly not an environmentalist who wants to wipe out half the universe so that resources aren't scarce, like in the movie. He just wants to wipe them out because he wants to offer them as a sacrifice to death, his beloved. So some differences, but you will find a lot of things that are familiar as well. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. I know it was a little bit of a longer one for a Thanos reading order and Marvel chronology episode, but I feel it was worth it because there was a lot to say and to talk about when we're sort of ending an era here with the classic era of Thanos. So as always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.